Certainly. We'll go ahead and begin at this time. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the At-Large Ad Hoc Working Group on IANA Transition and ICANN Accountability, taking place on Monday, the 8th of February, 2016 at 1630 UTC. On the English call, we have Cheryl Langdonor, Olivia Crippen-LeBlanc, Barack Otenio, Shun Ojedeji, Kali Khan, Eduardo Diaz, Gordon Chillicott, Sebastian Bachelet, Tijani Benjamin, and Alan Greenberg. We have no apologies listed at this time. From staff, we have Heidi Ulrich and myself, Terry Agnew. Our Spanish interpreters today are Claudio and Marina. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking, not only for transcription purposes, but also for our interpreters. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Terry. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And have we missed anybody in the roll call? Seeing no hands up and hearing nobody shout their name out, the roll call is complete. And we can adopt today's agenda, which is, again, primarily focusing on the CCWG accountability work. Is there any additional business to add in the any other business part of this call? I'm not seeing any hands up. I note from Alan in the chat that he apologized for not updating the agenda, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of things to discuss. So we can make it up as we go, and perhaps we'll have to amend the agenda afterwards if there are any documents and so on that need to be shared for anyone who wishes to listen to the call later on. So the agenda is adopted at the moment, and we can move to the action items. So those were just one action item regarding a doodle that was done. So we're down to agenda item number three, the update from the IANA coordination group, and also under the same header, update from the CWG IANA stewardship transition. Not very much going on at the moment. I do not see Jean-Jacques Subrenat on the call. So I don't know if anybody else has been following any events on the ICG. I believe from the timetable of calls that there hasn't been any movement in the ICG. They're obviously still waiting for the rest of the process to continue and to conclude. So we can focus on the CWG IANA work. There has been a call last week. There is going to be a call this week looking at the budget work, preparing for the call tomorrow, looking at the budget items which the CCWG accountability has been working on and which work with the recommendations that the CWG IANA have been coming up with. I haven't, unfortunately, seen in our email the budget which was supposed to be sent, or documents which were supposed to be sent ahead of that call tomorrow. It might be that those will be sent after this, the current call is finished. So unfortunately, I can't really discuss much of the budget items at the moment. If anybody else has knowledge of that information, then please put your hand up and let us know. The other thing, of course, is the review of the call that took place last week. The IANA-CWG call, there was an update on the IANA There was an update on the IANA IPR, intellectual property side of things. There was an update on the implementation. There was an update on how things, relations and things mixing between the CWG accountability and CCWG accountability and CWG IANA. And then there was a discussion on the ICANN bylaws relating to the CWG IANA stewardship. Nothing really from what I listened to on the call, nothing really too amazing to report. Certainly one thing I was pleased to see was the implementation update. It seems that the implementation is going on very professionally as far as the certainly as far as the service level agreements are concerned. As you might know, Via Genie's Marc Blanchet is a contractor that's working on this at the moment, and he's working with the service level expectation team, and things are apparently progressing, albeit at a small, at a slow rate, but well in time to have things are working with proper metrics being collected, etc. So that's one thing that I think we don't have to worry about, but if anybody else has concerns, please let us know. On the IPR issue, certainly the CRISP and the IETF working groups have been working together to try and see how we're going to have the INA.org and all this dealt with. There wasn't very much that we were told on this occasion. Can we just open the floor? I see Alan Greenberg having put his hand up. Maybe Alan wishes to comment on some of the points that I've just made. Alan, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. A comment and a question, or several comments and a question. With regard to the work that Mark is doing on the collecting statistics and past history on the metrics for the IANA transactions, it's one of the things I think due to the be kind, the over-eagerness of some of the people involved in the process, what we have requested in terms of statistics and information on performance has been far in excess of what was really needed. And I think we're spending a huge amount of effort on it that perhaps is not really going to be, was really needed. But nevertheless, we are doing it, and they're doing their best to try to collect information that just isn't available or isn't easily available. On a larger scale, the overall implementation of the whole transition work that's going on, I have been just overwhelmed with the professional way that this whole thing has been approached. And the person they have that seems to be in charge of the process is really, really good. And ICANN had a reputation when we were looking at the new GTLD process of not being able to get its act together and doing things in a professional way. And I think that seems to have been turned around completely. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for how they're handling the overall process. I'm being very, very impressed. Olivia, you asked a question about budgets before, and I admit I was trying to get organized and I wasn't listening to the original part of the question. What budgets were you talking about?
Yes, thanks, Alan. It's Olivia speaking. There is a meeting about the budget with Design Team O, which developed a part of the recommendations that were needed regarding the budget veto process, et cetera,
okay.
And then
got
pass
it.
These on over to the CCWG accountability. Something has come back from CCWG accountability. We need to read through those documents and then discuss them in the call tomorrow. But I haven't seen those documents. I don't know.
Okay.
And they were supposed to be sent to us this weekend, so I might have missed them, but I just wonder if anybody else has received them.
That can't help on that one. So I'll put my hand down.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. And thank you for your comments on the professionalism that is currently being displayed. I also am absolutely, I don't know if I can say overwhelmed, but certainly extremely pleased to see that. Now, when it comes down to the bylaws themselves and the ICANN bylaws relating to the CWG stewardship, which is the next part of the discussions that has taken place, I also found that the work has been extremely thorough. There are tables and responses and just an enormous amount of data that is here. I mean, is it an overkill? I don't think it's an overkill. I think things need to be done properly, but I can certainly see why the legal bill is mounting up because the work that is being done there is just not particularly simple. But I'm also quite pleased about the process by which things are done. There is an action item that came from that call last week, which was that there needs to be a discussion on the costs related to the bylaws work, and we might be put in front of the question, basically, as to say, well, does every single bylaw change have to go through this process of Sidley working on the bylaws and producing a draft and another draft and the feedback, etc., bearing in mind every minute that is spent on this costs a lot of money. We haven't been asked that question yet, but it looks as though with the current concern about budgets, that might be a question coming across our way, specifically on CWG INS stewardship. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I'd like to defer that question until we have a more general talk on budgets and budget overrun, because I think there are some things that need to be said, and this is just one subset of that. So if we could defer that for a few minutes, I would appreciate it. I put my hand up I think we should go on record of saying who the person is that has been reporting on the implementation process and who I presume is actually in charge of it. And her name is Trang Nguyen. And I don't know what that noise is. It's really confusing. Can we try to get rid of thank you?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine. Back to you.
Anyway, Trang has really impressed me, and I think we should actually mention her name. I'll put it in the chat for those who didn't catch it. But just worthy of noting. And on the overall budget, let's talk about that as a separate item, please.
Karen, thank you. Olivier Catanablon speaking. And thanks for indeed mentioning the name Trang Nguyen. As you know, the agenda has a link to the agenda of the INS-CWG meeting, number 76. There was a lot of calls. So are there any comments or questions regarding anything to do with CWG INS stewardship transition? And Alan, is that a new hand?
No, old one.
Okay, thanks. Okay, well, yes, Sean, please, you have the floor. Sean Ojedeji, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you, Olivier. I just wanted to make comments in relation to the...
Have we lost Sean?
Hi, this is Terry. Yes, we have... Sean's line has disconnected. We'll continue to try to reach him.
Okay, thanks for this, Terry. It's Olivia speaking. Bit of a problem when we have technical problems like this. Sean is traveling at the moment, so that might be a reason why he was dropped. How long does it usually take to have him back on the call?
Since he's traveling on the cellular phone, it could take several minutes, if at all.
Okay. Well, let's then get moving, and we can always, Alan, if that's okay, if Sean comes back on, we can always jump back to him on his comments for CWG INF when he gets back on the call. In the meantime, in the interest of efficiency, let's close this topic, seeing no other hands, and let's move to the CCWG accountability, where Alan Greenberg is going to take us through some of the recent developments. Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I think the where we are, and I'll Leon, perhaps, is Leon on the call? I think he is.
Is indeed on the call.
Yeah.
Yes, I am, Alan.
Yeah, thank you, because I actually haven't had a chance. I had other calls this morning that ran late, and I didn't get the chance to do my prep that I should have been doing for this call. So I'm not quite sure what the items are on the agenda tomorrow for the CCWG. Certainly one of them is the GAC issue, and there was a meeting earlier today. Leon, are you in a position to report on what the outcome of that meeting was? Did things change substantively?
Yes, I can gladly do so. And, there was really not much change at all. I think that the conclusion from the coaches was that nobody really moved an inch on their positions. But I think that the discussion did flow. And my sense is that on tomorrow's call on the CCWG, we might be finding out whether we are going to get closure on these based on consensus or whether we are going to have closure. And even though we cannot reach consensus within the group, and that would, of course, motivate the minority statement from the GAC, if in the case may be, because we are aware, or at least we have been told, that not even the GAC has a consensus position on recommendation 11, so it would be also difficult for them to actually file a minority statement in this case. But there were a couple of comments made today in the call. There was a suggestion by Steve Del Bianco. Now the debate has, of course, centered on recommendation 11, singling out the GAC from the rest of the community, and the GAC, of course, not wanting to be singled out. And one of the questions is, if the GAC is not going to be able to vote on the community council when trying to invoke an IRP, a community IRP, that tries to override GAC advice implemented by the board, then there is, of course, the recommendation states that in order to avoid giving the GAC two bites at the apple, then the GAC shouldn't be able to vote in that process, but that wouldn't refrain the GAC from participating in the discussions and advocating for their positions. So at this point, this is how things stand, and there were different questions about who would determine if that is the case, that the IRP would be trying to overrule a GAC advice, if the board's decision was taken in implementation of GAC advice. So there are several questions around process. And as I said, Steve Bianco proposed today a three-step process in which the initiating party would have to declare whether its or their challenge was in reference to any GAC advice implementation by the board. Then the second step would be that the community would need to actually evaluate whether this IRP or this claim by the initiating party was considered to be accurate, and then from there, the process would initiate. So, as I said, we haven't really made that much of a progress in this end, but at least new options are showing on the table. Another option is to try to specify that this carve-out would apply to GAC advice only, as opposed to those decisions made by the board implementing advice from different ACs, like, for example, the ALAC, of course. And if that is the case, then we would be very clear that this carve-out would only apply to the case in which the board decision was taken in implementing direct GAC advice. And also we would be thinking maybe of establishing this process for Workstream 2. So this hasn't been already put on the table formally, but it's another option that has been going up and down between the coaches and the leadership team in the CCWG. So that is the state of the art at this point, Alan.
Okay, thank you very much. One or two corrections. I hate to correct you, but I have to. You said that the GAC would be prohibited from using their vote to stop a community IRP. That's what the original proposal from Becky said, but the current one says any community action, not just an IRP. So, for instance, if we chose to remove the entire board in remedy of the action that they took in regard to a GAC advice, then it would apply to that one as well. Remember, there's a caveat saying if this is in regard to a power that needs four ACs and SOs, it will be reduced to three. The IRP only needs three. So it is wider than just the IRP, and in fact, some of the GAC members who are objecting are saying that if it was still restricted to just the IRP, it would be okay. But since it's wider than that, that changes the perspective. So it's a little bit more complex. The process that Steve is now talking about is gets even messier, because clearly any AC or SO will say this is related to GAC advice, to that essentially removes one possible objection by saying they can't object. And if we now need a decision process to decide whether that's right, I don't even know how this would work. I find the whole discussion somewhat, I will say, amusing, except it's not funny. We're talking about at least three ACs and SOs taking action because of the board's implementation of GAC advice, or lack thereof. And to imagine that since the GAC can't be a participant in this, according to the current proposal, it has to be three of the GNSO, the CCNSO, the ASO, and the ALAC deciding that the board acted completely unreasonably. I find that so unimaginable, that GAC advice is likely to be in relation to one of the ASO, the CCNSO, or the GNSO. It's not likely to span it. To get at least two of those SOs and the ALAC, or all three SOs without the ALAC, supporting such action, it's just so unimaginable that I just don't, you know, I understand the symbolic importance of it, like the symbolic importance of a supermajority or 60% to overrule the advice. But it's all symbolic in my mind. It has nothing to do with reality that will really unfold. So it's rather mind-boggling. The other thing that confuses me is out of the first meeting of this special group, they came up with an announcement saying there was a consensus. And then several of the GAC members who were at the meeting immediately said, no, there wasn't. So I don't quite understand this. I see Olivier's hand is up.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Clapin of Blanc speaking. And one thing that we have to remember is that GAC members who are at a meeting cannot portray the position of the GAC. They represent individual countries. And it's very difficult for the GAC to reach consensus on things in such a fast way, because every member of the GAC has to go back to their government department, etc. They just work at a different speed. So that's probably one of the reasons why we have some that might say, yeah, we have consensus, and then they'll have to turn back and say, actually, no, we don't, because their boss or whatever it is says, no, we don't have a consensus. It's a bit of a headache in this respect. But coming back to why I wanted to have my hand up, you mentioned the symbolic aspect to it, and I have grave concerns about this. What we're doing here now is to carve out the GAC from the community powers, and we are doing it in a way which basically, I would say, really is seen as weakening the GAC's influence. And I always think of examples. So let's think of something that happened in the past, the morality and public order. Do you remember the morality and public order thing that the GAC pushed forward with? And that was a big flashpoint with the ICANN board and the discussions that took place. I just wonder how that would have played out if the SOs and ACs, the rest of the community, could have actually overruled the whole fragile, because I think that when the GAC ends up in direct negotiations with the board, it's something that is important enough for countries to go into negotiations with the board. They strike a fragile agreement, and then the community is able to overrule this. Yes, fine, there needs to be a lot of the community involved, but imagine the whole community then overruling this. What happens then with the governments that are concerned? If the GAC pushes that far and they reach a consensus, because we're dealing here with a consensus thing, does that mean that all of the governments of the world are going to be overruled? In which case, the danger being that they're just going to say, forget about the GAC, we'll just do this at the United Nations. I don't know. I have a concern about this, and it doesn't seem right. And I know that the agenda of some of the members of that working group has been from the very beginning to interpret the U.S. Requisite in the INS stewardship transition that the solution should not be a government-led solution. But I have a feeling they're going a little too far on that. Thank you. Alan, you might be muted.
Yep, no, sorry. I forgot I was chairing this session. Sebastian, go ahead.
I just read, it's Sebastian, but I read in the chat that Sean is back on audio. Maybe you can give him the floor. Before.
And you can speak.
This is Terry. Just for a quick update, Sean had some noise in the background, so we'll try our best.
Hello.
Thank you. Go ahead, Sean.
Hello. Can you hear?
We can. Go ahead.
Okay. This is Sean. I think the comment I was sorry for, I don't know whether it was my question got through the other time during the discussion. I was trying to ask if anybody knew what the ILP subgroup was, because it was part of the document and it was closing clear to me. That said, on the current subject of discussion, I think Olivier has actually said the most important part, and I think most of my concerns are not always on the mailing list. In order to maximize the time, I guess just to hear the view of the other parts of the group. My stance is very clear. This is not necessarily supporting GAC or taking side in GAC. It's actually protecting the interests of internet users as a whole. So, but again, we may not see it as such, but that is just my view. I didn't want to take much time before I lose next opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm afraid I couldn't understand much of what you were saying, but hopefully someone else can and will respond as appropriate. Sebastian, go ahead.
Thank you. I will not help you with that. I was very difficult to understand. I have two questions. One is that I was thinking that it was only possible for the community to act if the board was not acting within the bylaw of ICANN following the GAC advice. Then it's not just the GAC advice was targeted, but it's the fact that the board didn't act following the bylaws. And if so, I guess it's a little bit different. But the second point is that I really think that a lot of those discussions are just what we can have as a image. It's a question of image more than anything else. And I get your point, Alan, to say that it will never happen, but a lot of things we are discussing in 1 year will never happen because it's almost impossible. But we need to keep the government inside the organization. I was agree with Olivier in one of his last mail about that, and what Yes, there are other males talking about that. It's important that we get the GAC inside ICANN. That's the second point. The third one, it's if, for example, we get the same advice to the board and the GAC, that ALAC gives the same advice to the board and the GAC, what will happen? I read somewhere that somebody wanted then ALAC will be outside of the game too. Then at the end we may end up all the people of the organization giving an advice to be outside of this community power. I feel very discomfortable with that. Thank you.
Thank you. You raised a number of things, and some of them were ones I was going to talk about also. Let me try to go over some of them, then we'll go to whoever else is in the queue.
I like to stay on the queue, but I'm sure.
We seem to have Shun coming in again. Okay. On the issue of is this only violation of bylaws, if it was only an IRP that we could initiate because of this, and the IRP can only rule on bylaws, then you were correct. And that is, I believe, what was originally proposed. Currently, it's talking about any community power. So, for instance, if the GAC makes a recommendation which ends up in a specific budget action, and the rest of the community is up in arms saying we shouldn't take that budget action, then we could use the budget power, and the GAC would not be able to respond, would not be able to stop that. So it's not just the bylaws through an IRP. It's any of the community actions that are that were originally requested through a GAC advice or advised through GAC advice. So it's a little bit more general than just bylaws right now. In terms of keeping governments happy, we have to remember there are a few governments right now, or a few representatives of governments in the CCWG, who say they're exceedingly unhappy. It's quite clear, however, the GAC at this point cannot act because their acting requires consensus, which says no objection. And no matter which proposal is put forward, somebody's going to object. There are strong supporters of these restrictions in the GAC right now. There are strong opposition. So it's pretty clear the GAC is not going to be able to come to closure and make a statement on Recommendation 11. It may be unfortunate, but I can't see it happening, because no matter which direction you pick, somebody's going to object to it. So keeping all governments happy is not going to be possible. The question is, how do we do the minimal damage? The situation we have is sort of interesting. I don't think there's a chance right now of the ALAC also being included in this carve-out, because we're talking about GAC advice, which the board must adhere to or negotiate on, and we don't have that level of provision. If we were given the same influences the GAC, yes, then maybe we would be carved out too. But that's nothing that has been said right now, and I don't think there's any chance we're going to get it in this go round. The situation is interesting. We're saying if the GAC gives advice and the board follows it, then the community can overturn it, but the GAC can't be involved in that decision. We're saying if the GNSO gives recommendations and the board follows it, they cannot be overturned by the community unless the GNSO agrees. So it's almost a different decision, a different opposite way of treating it, except the GNSO decision has had community involvement and comment before. So that's the big difference. The GAC advice is made without any other input. So the overall situation is intriguing. The question we're really asking right now is, this is a discussion between really passionate people in the GAC and in the GNSO in particular, who are insisting that there be some way to limit the GAC's, what they perceive as the GAC's complete control. Does the ALAC really want to formally intervene? And if so, is this a die-in-the-ditch issue for us that we will refuse to ratify unless we get what we want? So I guess that's one of the questions we need to answer. Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier Capaneblanc speaking. I note that Sean wanted to be put in the queue, so perhaps should we first have Sean and then I can intervene.
Okay,
afterwards.
Sorry, I didn't see that message. Certainly, if he can speak, go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Olivia. This is Sean for the record. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but we can also hear noise in the background, so it's hard to make out what you're saying.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. That's because I'm on the road. So I'll try to be as audible as much as possible. So I think you've responded to one of the questions of the government that I want to respond to. That was the first question about community power on that as well. I think you have really, really framed the issue by your last couple of sentences. The main issue is it is not fair, quote, actually,
we've lost you, Sean. Sean, we can't hear you speaking anymore.
I thought he'd finished.
Maybe. I couldn't understand enough. Can you repeat what you think he said then? Can anyone repeat what Sean said?
Yeah, Alan, it's Olivier speaking. I was trying to focus and take notes, but he said the main issue is, and it just got worse, and that was it.
Yeah, I think he said I brought his concerns to a focus, but I didn't hear what he said after that.
That you framed them well.
Yeah.
That's the next thing that I heard. And then main issue is, and that was it. Then he was cut off. So, it's Olivier speaking. Let me just then take my turn, and then maybe if Sean gets back on afterwards, you can go back to him. I fully understand your positions. I'm horrified to hear, and I was not fully aware of this, that so any decisions of the GNSO cannot be overturned without the agreement of the GNSO, but any decision of the GAC could be overturned, but without the GAC having any part in being able to defend its position or go against overruling the GAC position.
Well, any part is exaggerating. They could not be a formal participant in the objective, supporting or objecting to the community power.
Thanks, Alan. So that's really, at the end of the day, complete disenfranchising of the GAC. And as I said in my email messages, the question really becomes whether we want to get involved or not in this. Because is this going to be a red line issue for the GAC? Well, I don't know the history of it, but how did the special powers of the GAC and the negotiation between the GAC and the board power come about? I don't know if you do remember or if Cheryl remembers or someone who was there at the time remembers, but that was obviously, that special power was there for a reason, and it must have been quite an important reason for it to happen. And I'm concerned that now we really are taking this thing apart, and
yeah,
taking this thing apart is not going to fly well with GAC members. And it might well be that there will be no consensus on the GAC, but, you know, we're going to end up with a default, which is that the GAC is not going to vote on this. And the whole thing might come, indeed, go through. The whole process might work out. But then the fire will take place outside of ICANN.
Yeah, Olivier, I'm not sure how far back the bylaws go, and I'm looking at it as we speak right now, and I'll check. I believe the the condition goes far enough back that it was not even clear at that point if the GAC was part of ICANN or a body outside of ICANN. So it certainly goes back into way, way into history. And I'm not sure trying to analyze why it was to begin with is all that relevant at this point. It's quite clear in my mind.
It was just to gauge the importance of, you know, how important is it for the GAC to have this power?
Oh, it's exceedingly important.
From the ATRT, too, the fact that we wanted to have, we as in the ALAC, and you were there in the room, we saw the amount of fire that erupted and the shields that went up when we mentioned and said, well, why doesn't the ALAC have also this ability to have some feedback from the board? And we were told, no, the GAC is a special animal. I don't know how this would fly if we now have the GAC relegated to the back of the room and at the kiddies table.
Yeah, I see Cheryl's hand is up, and I'll give the floor to her. I really don't think that this changes anything in reality, and I understand perceptions count. The board still has to give the GAC preferential treatment in their advice. So I really don't think that alters that at all. But recall, the GAC is not likely to make a decision because there are different opinions in the GAC. So parts of the GAC are going to be upset. But that's true regardless of how we go forward. Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl Langdon, all for the record, and hopefully my microphone is appropriate for interpreters. Terry will ping me if that's not the case. Putting on my historical record hat in a moment, but just before I do, I agree with you, Alan. I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. However, I also think that if the GAC is unable to either endorse or otherwise, in other words, remain silent on all of this as an outcome, and that allows the GNFO to pat its little selves on its collective backs and go, my, aren't we good how we stood strong and won this one? Well, then so be it. At least we can move forward. That said, the special consideration of GAC advice is an important feature. It's an important feature that I think has been a very reasonable one, even when we saw the development of sitting down at the round table and discussing the issues that came out, albeit fairly late, during the new GTLD process. With the scorecard development and all those sorts of things, without the special circumstances associated with GAC advice, none of that would have ever happened. It does need to be maintained. And of course, recommendation 11 and stress test 18 at no point try and diminish that. What it does do is, stress test 18 and recommendation 11, what they do is instruct the board how to act and react in the circumstance where it is not going to follow that advice, and that advice is a consensus advice. Now, of course, right now the GAC has that consensus advice clearly articulated in one way, but there is at the moment nothing stopping the GAC changing that concept, degree, and definition of consensus. So at the moment, you know, as long as there is no objection, things can go through. From a historical perspective now, the particular referential treatment to consensus GAC advice goes back to pre-CCNSO days, and whilst the DNSO was going through its first little growing and teenagehood spurt, and it was at a point where there was a fairly low number of governments and a quite narrowly focused number of governments paying attention to the GAC. But it's a good thing that, of course, has in fact been a major attraction for the other governments running now, what, the 140s or 150s, I think it is, to become involved and engaged. So it's really important that we recognise that REC 18 and REC 11, Stress Test 18 and REC 11 don't diminish that. No intention of diminishing that as such, but it does instruct the board how to react when they are not going to follow that advice and how that advice is defined. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. I just went back through the bylaws. The explicit handling of GAC advice was added in the bylaws of December 2002, which was what is generally called ICANN 2.0. That is when the DNSO was split into the CCNSO and the GNSO, when the ALAC was created. All of those changes came about at the same time, and that's when the explicit phrase was put in about GAC advice. There's something to remember here, and again, people who haven't been involved in the process for very long may not understand it. Almost all the GAC advice, which has been interesting, so to speak, has been in relation to the new GTLD policy, and that is explicitly in relation to GNSO-related things. So there's very much a GAC versus GNSO issue going on here. And that's the reason that I don't think it's substantially important, that is, in reality, because it is a GNSO versus GAC issue and not an ICANN versus GAC issue. But it explains some of the history of why parts of the GNSO definitely want to be able to limit what the GAC can ultimately do. If not through advice, then through other processes. So we're seeing an incarnation of what's happening, what has happened in the world, and where the GAC advice has been focused when it has been sensitive. So I think that's simply a reality I have to live with, but it's for that same reason, it's not likely to have any substance in reality. Thank you. Anyone else? There are some other substantive issues we need to talk about. At this point, I'm not hearing a lot of people. I'm hearing people who are worried about how some governments may react to this. I'm not hearing that this is something which we believe we can either influence strongly or should refuse to ratify because of. But I'm maybe misjudging that, but that's the way I'm hearing this. Is there anyone who feels this is something that we really need to weigh in on and perhaps potentially not ratify the recommendation because of it? I saw Sebastian and then Olivier. And to Johnny.
Yes, thank you, Sebastian. The question is what we will end up. It's not too much if we agree with one or the other recommendation. What is the overall picture? And I really feel that if the end game is the GNSO winning against the GAC, we as end user, we are losing. We need a stable organization, and the stable organization is that with almost equivalent gain and loss in this change. If not, we will be into trouble. And I will repeat it once again, hopefully last time, but my trouble is that if at the end of the day ICANN can't work, we will close ICANN, and the member of the GNSO will have no trouble, and CCNSO will have no trouble, and ISO will not have trouble, and GACISER, the only one out of the game will be the end user, will be us. Then we have to take into account that in our decision. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll point out that those in the GNSO who have pushed heavily for this carve-out have said, well, the GAC added in the 66%, now 60, as the way they could stomach the change that was required by stress test 18. And so they're saying this carve-out just balances what they're getting on the 66 or 60%. So that's how they're rationalizing that it's equal. I realized Olivier said something earlier, and I just want a very quick comment, that the question is, if the community can override the GAC in something, then we're headed for trouble. That's not exact words. I'm afraid we headed down that path when we started this whole CCWG accountability, that we're empowering the community. And once you empower the community has power. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes when we get to budgets. Anyway, Olivier and then Tijani and Cheryl in that order. We're going to run out of time, so let's try to keep comments brief. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Capon of North speaking. And I'm glad you just mentioned this thing about the community being empowered because it is indeed the community being empowered. But the community, a multi-stakeholder model, includes governments. And I don't understand how we are doing now in putting together a multi-stakeholder model without governments, on government advice. I mean, it just defies logic. But anyway, I just wanted to read the point that Sean was mentioning. He sent it via Terry on the chat. So from Sean, there is no reason to allow GAC to defend herself and to not allow GAC to defend herself, especially since GAC only has one single vote, and that vote can't exercise any power. If there is need to increase the threshold to rejecting board's action on GAC advice, then we could do that. We should not make them not be able to participate in the decision-making at all. I have discussed this with people privately, and the only reason they gave is that GNSO will not pass the proposal. Nobody is considering GAC at all. I think it will be in the interest of Internet user not to lose this little influence of an advisory committee. That's the point of Sean. My own points on this, you're asking, is this a red line issue for us? I did say in my message earlier, that unless the GAC is going to fight beck and tooth on this, I don't think the ALAC should fight beck and tooth on this, because we're certainly not going to take bullets on behalf of the GAC. And I wondered whether there was or there is the ability to discuss this with GAC members as bilaterals, whether I don't know when the ratification is due to take place. Is it going to take place before Marrakesh or after Marrakesh? Is it going to be too late when we are in Marrakesh, and are we meeting with a GAC in Marrakesh? Maybe that would be one of the things we need to discuss with them. Thank you.
Thank you. We are meeting with the GAC in Marrakesh. The decision, it is conceivable that if we got our act together, we or anybody else could make a decision prior to Marrakesh. It is not very likely at this point. Now, whether the decision will be made prior to us meeting with the GAC, I don't remember when we're meeting with the GAC, perhaps staff can remind me. Sorry, I had something else to say, but I can't remember what it is now. Tijani.
Thank you very much, Alan. Jenny speaking.
Go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to say that we took a very right. Do you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. So I said that we took a very wise decision at the beginning not to take a position on anything regarding the GAC. Last time we were asked if we had to vote, how we will vote. I said that it is better that we don't vote, but if we are obliged, I was to support the recommendation. Now, coming back to this issue, to this particular issue, I think that I don't want to repeat what Olivier just said. Everything, I agree with everything he said, and we will not we will not oppose while the GAC don't do. And second, the GAC will never have the opportunity to have a decision, because that decision should be with no objection. And as you know, there is two parts, at least two parts, that are opposite one to the other, and they will never agree on something together. They think that on what they more or less agreed on were some issues on the nullity, as Alan said. So if the recommendation was to not involve in the decision-making any party, any SO or AC who is involved in the issue discussed, I would agree on it. But if we specify the GAC, I think it is not fair at all. My fear is only one. As you know, I can had a lot of criticism before. And with the coming of FADI, we had less, because FADI tried to decrease the pressure by the internationalization of the organization, by the hubs opened here and there, also by going to China, going to everywhere, speaking to everywhere. Now, if we go and make the government more or less out of the decision, they already say that this is not a real transition. If we do it in this way, I think it will be harmful for the future of ICANN. But we don't have anything to do as end users now, and the best position we have to take is not to take position. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. And I think we agree that unless there is strong opinion otherwise, we would support a general recommendation, but that doesn't mean we're actively campaigning for it. I'll point out, with a new Swedish CEO, we should have a peacemaker who will get everyone to talk to each other. Cheryl.
Cheryl, for the record, if only that's the case, I'd be very happy. However, the main thing is it is likely to send conciliatory and quite reasonably experienced battling in the boardroom messages from who they've chosen. Sorry, it's a good choice. Anyway, that said, it is not a die-in-the-ditch issue from my perspective. I believe we need to stay the course, as Tijani said, that we agreed to earlier on this. I am less concerned than Sean and others are indicating on today's call about this being a situation where the GAC is somehow being muted. I think in actual and in practical terms, that's really not the case with the carve-out. We are talking about the fact here that under the current definition of GAC consensus, and to quote Thomas Schneider from today's meeting, 99.9% of what the GAC says is a consensus position. Therefore, the board's appropriate response and deference to it is expected. That's not going to change, you know, in the near future anyway. The board has to date, under only very few circumstances, found that for good reasons it is not in a position to, in inverted commas, follow GAC advice, close the inverted commas. And under those circumstances, it has behaved as the current bylaws outline, which is looking for mutually acceptable solutions, blah, 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 blah. That's not going to change, right? The whole thing about the carve-out is, in that point one of however much of a rare point in time in the near distant future we ever get to have a situation where the board says no and for some reason decides that it's not going to do what the GAC wants, and for some reason that is counter to community as well, then all it says is the GAC can certainly defend, certainly influence, certainly advise, that's not just advice to the board, but advise the community and help the community in the empowered community model understand its position, but it can't exercise our vote. In other words, it doesn't get a double dip on that issue. It's like finding a hen's tooth, really, on the likelihood of it ever happening. You said that earlier, Alan. So we're worrying about stuff that is politically and, I was going to say superficially, but that doesn't indicate the seriousness of the nature. On the surface of things, very important, so we do need to get it done and get it done right. The worst case scenario, in my view, will be that the GAC remains silent. And if that's the case, so be it. We should stay our course on this one, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Terry has noted the GAC, the ALAC GAC meetings on Tuesday, which will mean it is likely after we have made a decision on the on ratification. Quick comment. I was distracted. The comment that Shun made, I think there's an issue with the first part of his first sentence, and I think we all have done this at various times. He started off saying there is no reason to not allow the GAC to defend itself. That's an opinion. It's not a fact. Because very clearly there are people within the CCWG who feel very strongly that we need this carve-out. So we need to really be careful when we talk about differentiating between what we believe and what are actual facts. So just a caution as we go forward. I'd like to go on to other issues. Are there other things that people want to continue on this one? I think we've sort of come to closure, but there's two other issues that I think we need to discuss, and we're going to run out of time if we don't move to them soon. Are we okay in stopping this one now? I see no hands and hear no voices. Okay, the next issue is the one that I raised at the last meeting, and there was some discussion on the list and some discussion this meeting, and that is the recommendation that we found that the change to a core value which says anything which ICANN does in relation to market issues must be developed through a bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. We objected to the fact that they used the expression policy development process and said that that could influence how we move forward on things like the African strategy, where quite clearly the ICANN is stepping in and attempting to create a DNS industry or a stronger DNS industry within Africa, and the same is true to a lesser extent in Latin America. There has been very strong pushback on that. Milton Mueller made a comment, which I think is relevant, because he said it's not the term policy development process in that core value was not capitalized, and he's correct. And I did go back through the bylaws with some care, and the term policy development process is used in two different ways. One is in relation to the processes within the CCNSO and GNSO, where it is capitalized explicitly in the bylaws, and other places where it's used where it is not capitalized. So I've really lessened my – I haven't commented on the list because we haven't talked about it, but I'm really not as nearly as concerned as I was when the issue first came up about the wording. I think there's a strong case that can be made that since it's not capitalized, it is not talking about GNSO CCNSO processes, but a more generic type. And for instance, the group that put together the African strategy, I believe, to the extent that that is a policy, I believe it is easy to claim that it was a policy created by a bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. So I'm not feeling particularly uncomfortable about letting that one die in the ditch, and I wanted to make sure that, or see if that was the feeling from others. I certainly don't feel strongly about pushing it as much as I did before. Olivier.
Thanks, Alan. Olivier Capin of Law speaking. I have a question for you. Many of the things that we're now seeing coming up in this CCWG accountability appear to be favoring the GNSO in one way or other in making basically the GNSO the center of ICANN, the final choice being primarily on any policy-related work being done by the GNSO. The last word would be with the GNSO and so on. It provides more power to the GNSO. The question I have is on this issue, do you think that, or does anyone here think that this is all part of this concentration of power within the GNSO, or is this just a sort of a good way to draft things? Bearing in mind, of course, the capital PDP, lowercase PDP thing.
Olivier, I think there's two parts to that. First of all, in reality, look at the amount of time we spend on GNSO-related issues versus other issues. Look at the amount of time the board spends on GNSO-related issues versus other issues. The GNSO and GTLDs are the center of a large part of what ICANN does. We have far less influence and ability to influence the CC world. The addressing world, we have an ASO, but the work is done outside of ICANN. So the GNSO is the center of a lot of what ICANN is about. And, is this being done, is the wording done because of the GNSO? To some extent, but I think in this case, I don't think the wording is going to hurt us. And that, I guess that's about as much as I want to say. Tijani, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Alan. Tijani speaking. when you remove the policy development from the text, what is the harm that will affect the other people, the GNSO, for example? I don't think there is any harm. But when you put it, even if it is not capitalized, as you said, it means policy development. And then ICANN policy development.
Tijani,
yes.
You're very hard to hear. You're sounding like you're in an echo chamber. If you go closer to your microphone, please.
Do you hear me now?
Much better.
Okay, thank you. So I repeat. So if we remove this section of policy development from the text, what is the harm that will affect the GNSO or any other party? I don't think there is anyone. If you put it in the text, it means policy development, and in ICANN, the policy development is done by the two SOs, GNSO and CCNSO. So I think that it is really meant to put it there. I remember when we discussed the issue of private sector-led, we fought it, but finally it is there at the end. And today when we speak about putting the government aside, you will have people who will say, ICANN is a private sector. And for them, private sector means business and end user, but not government. So the multi-stakeholder model is only said like this, but in the spirit of some people in our group, ICANN is private sector. So in the same way here, you wanted, Alan, to remove this expression of policy development. But at the end, we were convinced that since it is not capital letters, it is not important. I think it is important. But anyway, I think that as Olivier said, and I don't agree with you, Alan, yes, most of the work in ICANN is about GTLDs. But there is not only the GNSO involved in it. Everyone is involved in it. Everyone, I mean, the end users, the government, and the contracted parties. So I am not comfortable with that. Thank you.
Sorry, your last sentence was, you are not uncomfortable or not comfortable?
I am not comfortable.
Okay. A couple of things, and I see Cheryl's hand is up. I'll go to Cheryl in a minute. You said, what is the harm? The answer is that some people believe that the expression policy development process and bottom-up multi-stakeholder are used together within the bylaws at in some places, and therefore should continue to be used as a linked process. Removing it may have implications that some people see. So that's really the question. Again, we're talking about people's perceptions at this point. In terms of the policy development process is the one used by the GNSOP and CCNSO, therefore that's all it means, is that that is not correct. And it's a position I took, but I've looked at the bylaws with some care again. For instance, the current core values is employing open and transparency policy development mechanisms that promote well-informed decisions based on expert advice and ensure that those entities most affected can assist in the policy development process. So that's a very general statement. It certainly applies to creating the African policy, the African strategy, and it does use the expression policy development process, which is why I don't feel particularly uncomfortable at this point. Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl, for the record. And I put my hand up specifically to respond to one of Tijani's points. This is all based on, as Leon will attest to, a somewhat and almost heated exchange for some significant length of time between myself and Becky Burr during the leadership planning meeting for recent CCWG meetings. I really wish you'd have cooled down on this one a little bit earlier. I'd have been less aggressive, but anyway.
I actually read the comments people make and I think about them.
That's great. Just wish you'd done it sooner rather than later.
Oh.
That's all right. I'm only chipping you a little bit. And I think the uppercase and lowercase term of art definitions here are fairly important as well. That said, one of the primary reasons that Becky was being particularly resistant with me was that the use of the terminology policy development process, and for the life of me I can't remember, I believe however it was lowercase p, not uppercase p in this context, earlier in the documentation relating to the global public interest, which of course is a quite lengthy and much hard-wrought argument and debate that we had. And she felt to lose the terminology in the last sentence as you were proposing was going to put that definition in a question or risk situation. So that's just to present the argument that was being given to me as a counterpoint to the argument I was making in support of what you were asking for last time we met.
Well, to be clear, Cheryl, if you think
from that point of view, that's all. Thanks.
Yeah, Cheryl, to be clear, if you think we can win, I'll continue to be hard on it. I just don't think we're going to win. I don't think we're going to win, and I'm simply saying that I think I can live with not winning in this case.
Well I'm glad of that because I think what we can do is appear to be good little consensus builders and go for a win-win all round. But after the discussion, in inverted commas, that Becky and I had, she assured in private correspondence, just Skyping though, that she was absolutely au fait and had read and understood and was assuring herself that both the African and the LAC strategy, as the examples I had given, were not in peril. She certainly looked at it from a wider and different perspective And I think I can also rest assured that if she's dotted the I's and crossed the T's on that, looking at it from our point of view, that is also reassuring for me.
Yeah, well, and that was one of the comments that she did make that caused me to go back and read the words again carefully. We have Tijani, I think that's an old hand, but if not, we'll go to you after Sebastian.
Yes, thank you, Alan. It's interesting. I have trouble with the fact that one person from even in the leadership team and doing a lot of this work and say it was not what it's meant, because at the end of the day, Becky will not be here to tell us or will not be asked to say, hey, yes, it's what we meant. Then I could agree with the proposal of Alan if at the reverse we start to say that ESO are the only place where we do policy development. Because if we react to this word here, it's because we have so much time heard the people saying that, hey, you are not an ESO, you are not doing policy development. Then if it's the case, we stop to say that policy development is just done in one place, I have no problem with the proposal made by Alan to stop fighting for that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Sebastian, you make a good point, and we sometimes in ICANN, as Olivier alluded to earlier, that we are so GNSO-centric that we think of all policy as GNSO policy. But indeed, the SOs are the only ones to recommend to the board, because they don't make policy, all they do is recommend it, are the only ones to recommend policy on their issue. So the GNSO recommends policy on GTLDs. CCNSO on CCTLDs, ASO on addressing issues. They don't have a wider scope on policy outside of their particular domain. So, and there's nowhere that says that the only policies can exist are policies on those three areas. So I feel moderately comfortable now, regardless of whether Becky is there or not. So, you know, as I said, I can live with it. My preference would still be to remove the words. But I think we can live with the results. And you will recall that on the other issue that we felt strongly on, that is putting back in the where feasible clause on the market issues, that Becky's position was we feel strongly that it has to be back in, we and a few other people, because we did have some supporters. She felt adamant that it can't be there, and everyone else really didn't care. So given that she was the only one, she dropped that position, and we're reinstating the words. So, you know, I think, yes, she has some very strong positions and a very large history involved in this, but I think she's, you know, not acting completely unreasonably. So I'm happy to drop that where we are right now. I'm still going to say I want to see it, but I don't think we're going to die in the ditch over it. Anything else on this thing before one other issue, and we're almost out of time, but I think I have to mention it. Okay. The last issue I want to bring up is the one on overall budgets. And as hopefully all of you know, or many of you know, the board has identified that the overall CCWG-CWG budget, which at this point is projected to be $25 million over 2 years, is, and I quote, over budget, and something has to be done about it. It is, the money is coming, largely coming out of the reserve fund, which is putting their ICANN reserve fund in a somewhat dangerous position. And it's not clear how we're going to reimburse it, and it's not clear with the rest of Workstream 1 and then Workstream 2 coming up how we are going to attempt to control costs in the future. I find the wording completely inappropriate. That is, you can only exceed a budget if you were actually given that budget, and we were never given things that resembled a budget. We are seeing costs for things that we have asked. We, ALEC, has asked many times, what do they cost, and we've never given, been given an answer. And now we're being told that we are over budget on it. On the other hand, the amount of money we're spending is totally ridiculous and needs to be controlled somehow. I think the board has a larger part of the responsibility on this, not just the CCWG. They allowed the situation to go ahead with CCWG working on plans that they knew they were not going to accept, and somehow believed that if they just stayed quiet, the CCWG would somehow see the light and change its direction on its own. And I think that was living in a fairy tale world, and I think they bear a large part of the responsibility of where we are now, but we are where we are regardless of how we got there. And we're going to have to see some interesting changes going forward if we don't want to bankrupt ICANN on making it accountable. Comments, thoughts? Olivier, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Clapon of Law speaking. I agree with you on the certain disappointment in the wording of the letter. I have concerns that it seems to be putting the focus on the three co-chairs of the Accountability Working Group as being the people that are supposed to be keeping costs low and keeping track of these things. And I think that they have enough on their plate already without having to deal with this sort of thing. I would have thought that there was, and I hope there is, a staff member that is in charge of this whole thing, because ultimately that's the interface between the community and the payment and all of this stuff. So I'm just a bit disappointed there hasn't been an accountant that was delegated to this, keeping track of things and providing regular details of where the money is going and how things have been going. Just poor project management on ICANN's part.
Well, Olivier, you're co-chair of the CCWG on Internet Governance. Have you ever been told what your budget is?
Not at all, Alan. That's a wider problem. I don't think we can rewrite the world as it is now, or the ICANN world as it is now. But it's true that we are, as volunteers, we are not told the ins and outs of how much things cost.
Olivier, I would claim, I suspect, that there is no budget for the CCWG and Internet Governance. I don't believe, although we are in the midst of creating a CCWG and auction funds, that there is a budget associated with it. If there is, and we've never been told about it, I think there are some serious problems here. I think the budget has only came about after the fact. Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. Look, just on that, first of all, I don't think we're going to be bankrupting ICANN in its efforts to become accountable. And, you know, reserve funds can be built back up in a slower and steadier state, but we will have different financial and fiscal concerns and responsibilities because of the funds that have been expended on this, not just the CWG accountability, but CWG as well. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's the co-chairs there as well as the three for CCWG. So it's sort of a five-by split. That said, of course, exceeding a budget, perhaps it's just me, but I always thought one tried to budget adequately. I personally am not surprised at the amount of money this has taken, especially because it was always very predictable that this was going to involve a lot of legal advice. We also need to recognise, of course, that this budget is not just legal advice from the independent legal advisors to the CWG and the CCWG. Quite the contrary, there's a hell of a lot coming in on the other side of the tabled ledger for legal advice as well. Perhaps if one felt that the ICANN General Counsel's normal selection of expert external legal advice was fully accountable, transparent, and understood by the community, we wouldn't have been in this situation in the first place. But we couldn't, we didn't, and we knew we wouldn't be able to right back at the beginning. So maybe they should have given a bigger number that was pulled out of the air before all of this came to the point it is now. One of the main things I wanted to remind everyone, however, is that even during the process, both in the CWG and the CCWG, for one of the significant costs, let's use the example legal, external legal advice, both of those working groups have been, I think, quite responsible about controlling and focusing particular permissions for work to be done. Have we run down a couple of alleyways that we, in retrospect, wouldn't have bothered with? Yeah, sure, that's true. Is a more frank, fearless and timely conversation with main protagonists, including the board, earlier on, could that have changed those outcomes? Undoubtedly. But we got, as those of us who've been looking at the budgets and outflows as best we can during these processes, we got very little, if any, information about costs early enough. There was an awful lot of this could have been done better that can be levelled here. So it is what it is. I certainly remember, and Olivia, you were in the room, and I think, Alan, you were on the phone call. It might have been the other way around, when we certainly told with just on the CWG activities, just the accountability activities, that the budget that Xavier had put down on that year had to be, you know, probably tenfold more. If they didn't quite put those figures as high as we had suggested them then, and we are where we are, and yeah, but we're coming out of a spending. How we do the spending for the next work stream too, however, can and needs to be managed far more effectively and efficiently. Thank you.
Yep, I agree on all counts. One of the real problems, I think, is Leon can verify if this is true. The claim is made that when the co-chairs of the CCWG were approached, their answer was, it's not in our charter, therefore we don't have to do it. I think that was the wrong answer. But the fact that it isn't in the charter and no one ever said it should be in the charter and we've never gotten any numbers ahead of time, I think is the real indictment of where the problems are, not so much what the co-chairs have done or not done along the way. Tijani, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Alan. I agree with what you said, you just said, especially because Paddy told us in one of, I think it was a board CCWG joint meeting, that the legal advice, they don't have any say in it. He said, we just take the bill and pay. You decide on it. So the full responsibility is ours. And I think that during our work, there were some members on the CCWG who are always asking questions to the legal to the lawyers, and under the pressure of the repetitive questions like this, the CCWG co-chairs certify those questions, and sometimes they are really useless. Not useless, but I think that we don't need to have this particular question because we have other elements that lead us to have the answer. Anyway, so it is our responsibility in my point of view, and I think that I don't know if it happened, but our responsibility is to have some kind of elements for the cost, so that we know how to use the legal advice, so that we will not pay a lot. And I don't think if it happened, but if it didn't happen, I think it is a mistake too. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Tijani. Remember, we only have this concept of certifying requests to the lawyers because of the initial concern over how much money we were spending. that process has changed. My concern is, to a large extent, not so much on the legal costs, but on the fact that the total costs are over twice what the legal costs are. Yes, the legal costs are $11 million, but there's $12 or $13 million of other costs that we had no handle on whatsoever. Sebastian. And then Olivier.
Yes, thank you. Sebastian speaking. I think, unfortunately or fortunately, there were no budget at the beginning. I didn't see anything in the budget, in the yearly budget on that. I think the board must have been more ready, and the organization have been more ready to do that, to do this transition, and less in a pain to do that in 1 year or 1.5 year. But that was not the case. And yes, we spent a lot of money. Can we have spent less, maybe on legal costs? But I hope that we will not end up as it is proposed, that to decrease the cost, we will decrease a face-to-face meeting. I want to be sure that we got as much as in the Workstream 1, the possibility to work on Workstream 2, because it's as much important. It's just the fact that we decided to split in two, what we are doing to allow an earlier transition. But we still need to do the Workstream 2 in good condition. And that's important, that we will have a budget, we will have possibility to have face-to-face meeting and to work with some legal inputs. And the fact that now we are talking about this question of budget, I would like not to say that, end up with a situation to say that the three co-chair didn't do their job. They are already doing so much as volunteers, and we can't ask them to do everything. It's difficult. Who must do that? I don't know. But the group is not very helping. The situation of the two-day call was quite interesting. I am almost sure that we don't need the writing document of the legal advisor of what we talked today. But at the end, few voices say, yes, yes, we need it. Then we will have it, and then we will spend the money. Who must have said no? I don't think that it must have been the co-chair. They have already too much to do. But maybe somebody must be in charge of this type of thing. We need to split the roles or something like that. But this today meeting was quite illuminating on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Olivier and Tijani, then I'll close the queue.
Thanks, Olivier. Alan. It's Olivier. Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Capanablanc speaking. I'm concerned of the time. We are in minutes past the end of the official end of this call, so if we can just quickly close up in 5 minutes or less. Just quickly thinking, you know, that's life. Things have happened. How do we move forward with this, I think, is even more important. Do we, I mean, I've seen suggestions of no further face-to-face meetings of the CCWG. Is this something that's acceptable to us? A whole number of restrictions on the work of the CCWG, and it looks as though there's some way to move things over to some already existing processes. For example, the work on human rights would be moved to the Human Rights Working Group and other things. I mean, how does this abode for Workstream 2? Maybe we need to table this for our next call, because I think we probably need to discuss this a bit more. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the issues are related, and it's not clear how we go forward. With regard to Sebastian's comment on face-to-faces, they're going to be a lot more difficult right now. There's no question about it. Tijani, go ahead. Last comments.
Thank you very much, Alan. Exactly. Sebastian, you said Workstream 2 will work, but I am not sure there will be Workstream 2. Since they are taking now out some issues from the Workstream 2, I feel that there is a will to have a real Workstream 2. And I think that our CWG is chartered to work on the work on workstream too. It is part of our duty in the charter. So we need to complete it inside CCWG. And CCWG can fully, I repeat, satisfy any condition that was mentioned about the human rights topics that must be, that people want them to be treated outside CCWG. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Olivier, turn it back to you now.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Tepin-Leblanc speaking. We're moving swiftly into any other business. And the question of whether we need another call this week or whether we can wait until next week. What are the thoughts of both Leon and Alan, since you are the main machines behind, I call you machines now because I think you must be machines being able to stay up all that time, the main machines behind this drive in CCWG accountability?
My feeling at this point is there isn't another, there is a CCWG meeting tomorrow. There's another one the following Tuesday. I believe we decided we didn't need to meet until today because the meeting's not till tomorrow. However, because of that, we were not in a position to make comments on the list when the substantive discussions are happening, which happens immediately following the meeting, because we weren't advised by this group. So I would really strongly suggest that we want to meet either next Tuesday or Wednesday, after the meeting is. I don't remember exactly when that meeting is, but I would suggest perhaps Wednesday would be a good time to meet so we can advise this group what happened at the meeting and get some feedback to influence our discussions.
Thanks, Alan. Leon?
Thank you, Olivier. This is Leon Sanchez. And I would just kindly like to ask everyone on this group to make a list, a wish list, for Workstream 2, because as I have pointed in the chat box, this will be the main issue that we will be working on Marrakech. So it would be very helpful if we, as members and participants on behalf of the at-large community, go to Marrakech with a list of expectations, clear expectations, that we want to put on the table for the CCWG to consider and to take into account as they plan their work for Workstream 2. So I guess that could be one of the items for the agenda of our next call, and of course homework for everyone to make their list and come with these clear expectations to Marrakech. Thanks, Olivier.
Thanks very much for this. Leon, it's Olivier speaking. We'll have this as an action item, and in the interest of saving time, we'll listen to the recording to draft the action item from there, or maybe Terry has caught all of that. Regarding the timing next week, so next call 16th or 17th of February with...
No,
Olivier.
Olivier, I'm talking about...
Wednesday.
I'm talking about having a meeting after this week's meeting.
Oh, so this week still. Oh, sorry about
going forward, but this week's meeting is the initial one.
So then we need to thank you, Alan. Then we need to look at the 11th or the 12th,
or even the 10th.
That's going to be very short.
I know,
Terry. Can you have a doodle set up for this, please?
Yeah, I was doodling. Put it at the same inconvenient time you always do, Olivier.
Well, we don't know which ones of the 3 days or 3 nights for you we're going to inconvenience you on. So let's see which one we're going to make hell out of. Should we go for a Saturday night? Maybe we should do one of these weekend nights for you, shouldn't we? Hmm.
Been done before.
Do our Sunday. It's Monday for Cheryl.
Actually, I'd be more than happy for you to all do something on Sunday, and it'll be my Monday working day. That's fine.
I'm simply suggesting that if we have the meeting relatively soon after tomorrow's accountability, then we are better positioned to talk on the list about what ALAC feels as opposed to our own personal positions only.
Totally understood, Alan. Thank you. And so it's marked down in the action items. 10, 11, or 12th of February, time by Doodle. Terry, if you could please send this out ASAP, and we'll close this off sometime in the next 24 hours so we have this at short notice. I'd like to thank the interpreters. Leon, your hand is still up?
Oh, no, that's an old hand.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Leon. I'd like to thank our interpreters, Claudia and Marina, for the additional amount of time. They've given us another 50 minutes. And thanks to all of you. It's been a very, very interesting call today. And I good luck to those people who are on the accountability call tomorrow. With this call is now adjourned. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, Olivier.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day. Okay.